Inside the Boss Podcast.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and we are here talking boys high school lacrosse. I am joined by features and recruiting editor Jeff Shannon and events coordinator Josh Davey. And Josh, just to kick things off, we took a new approach to our high school rankings this year. Sponsored by Under Armour, as always, we decided to stick with the regional format. We've got five regions broken up, breaking up the country, and we have established the Under Armour Inside Lacrosse Regional Experts Poll. And the thought there was that, you know, based in Baltimore, we get to see a lot of teams coming through, and we'll touch on that with G. Shan in a second, but it's also helpful to have more or less, you know, emissaries spread throughout the country, and we've got, you know, upwards of a couple dozen who are informing us with these regional high school polls about which, or from which we can then form our Under Armour Inside Lacrosse National High School Power Rankings. So, Josh, you're the point of contact with these guys. As you have, you know, both kind of fleshed out a list of voters and then also taken in what they have had to say about lacrosse around the country, what's your sense on just kind of what the regional idea is and how well tuned in these guys are to what's going on in their area?
Yeah, it's really nice. Like you said, being in Baltimore, there's only so many games we can get to in person and see these kids playing and these teams playing live. So it's nice to have some experts who write for their, you know, certain publications across the country to, you know, get out to these games and really be some foot soldiers on the ground. It leaves a more of a national footprint for us as we put these rankings together. They have, you know, they know their region better than we do out there, so it's nice to have them contributing and makes our jobs a little bit easier and gives us more of, you know, an accurate kind of point on how these teams are and where they would rank against the rest of the teams in the nation.
And Jishan, you and I have been kind of part of forming a national ranking for, you know, upwards of almost a decade now, and really what it comes down to it is this new element is giving us a baseline of this is how folks view the lacrosse action in their region, how the teams stack up. And then it's our job kind of as a sounding board and looking at common results between the region to mesh the two things together. We're 3 weeks in now. How would you characterize the way the process has gone?
It's been fun. Gotten to know a lot of people on the high school side, as Terry said, over the last decade. But it's always been more on a reporter relationship level. Really building those relationships this year has been fun. It's been a good way to really inform what we're doing, decisions that we're making on the list, decisions that we're, you know, helping make in the regional areas. And really, you get a better sense of the players, the depth of talent, all sorts of different angles that have been nice to work with this season.
And, you know, one of the things that's a hallmark of this time of year, this, you know, mid to late March spring break time, is teams around the country traveling, playing each other, playing these really interesting intersectional games, interregional games, particularly in this mid-Atlantic area, most notably over the last week. And currently we've had Hill Academy and Culver Prep Academy swinging through and taking on some of the elite teams in the region. One of the interesting elements to this season is Gonzaga, a national power who we will talk about, is playing without a home field, so there have been a lot of neutral site games. I guess this is a question for both of you, but starting with you, G-Shan, how have you seen the way in which these intersectional games help to inform how a national ranking might look or should look?
The nice thing about these games is that these are teams that want to be involved in that conversation. So they travel to this region, they travel to the East Coast, they travel a little bit later in the spring to the Northeast to challenge themselves and to challenge the sort of national perception of where they're coming from, the players that they have, and to really be a part of the conversation. So it's nice to be able to go out basically every day at this point and see a top 20 team that wants to really push themselves against, you know, a traditional standard program that's always been in the top rankings. I've seen a half dozen games at this point, a dozen teams. With us in general, we've seen a ton of games so far, and we're not even done with March yet. It always helps inform with these top 25 rankings, and also just in terms of when we're doing our recruiting rankings, we get to see national talent as well, making sure the breadth of our knowledge is there. So it's a great time, and I love going out and checking out some of these teams.
And, you know, like G-Shan said, you know, these teams want to challenge themselves and play the best. So from as a lacrosse fan, getting out to go and watch these games, there's nothing really more you can ask for than, you know, kind of seeing the country as a whole in, you know, span of a couple weeks. So as a fan, it's, you know, it's the best.
And, you know, one of the unique challenges of this time of year is that so much of the best high school lacrosse teams in the country haven't played or have only played a game or two so far. You know, if you're in New England, you're probably still stuck under a little bit of snow. Getting out to practice hasn't been the easiest thing. And you know, even in downstate New York, whether it's Westchester County or Southern Connecticut, Northern New Jersey, or on Long Island, some of the, you know, premier hotbeds in the sport of lacrosse, you know, it's only a game or two. But, you know, transitioning into a little bit of the game action, G-Shan it was on Saturday, right, that you went out to St. Paul's to check out high school action?
They were doing a One Love Spring Fest out at St. Paul's School, one of these traditional events early in the season for New York and for Baltimore, but you bring Long Island teams, face off with Baltimore teams. They've kind of done this for the past decade. This year they tied it with the One Love Foundation, which was nice, a fundraiser for that program to raise awareness on relationship abuse, relationship issues. St. Paul's is really tied to that program at this point. So some great games, though. St. Paul's and Garden City and Manhasset and Boys Latin, a lot of talent out there. Garden City upended St. Paul's, Boys Latin took out Manhasset, which was interesting. I think Coach Bob Shriver at Boys Latin mentioned that was the first time that he remembered that those two programs had faced each other. These are two of the most traditional lacrosse programs in the country. It's nice to see those guys out there playing. And St. Paul's and Garden City both look good. Garden City has some tremendous talent. I wrote about it on InsideLacrosse.com. On the defensive end, and a great face-off guy in James Sullivan. They're going to go pretty far with those guys. They did lose to Syosset in their first game of the season. That's a team that I'm really interested in checking out a little bit more as the season goes along. But I liked a lot from what I saw out of those programs this weekend.
And then a couple other, you know, high-profile national matchups that you were able to get out to over the course of the last week. One that has always caught my attention is Calvert Hall versus Hill Academy. It's a game that dates back to Hill's first trip to Baltimore in 2008 and has been a contentious game over the course of that period of time since. But Hill really took it to them kind of on the back half of their trip through the Mid-Atlantic region and put on a double-digit win over the Cardinals. What do you think that says about, you know, Hill Academy's ceiling, realizing that only a day or two before they had lost in overtime to Gonzaga?
They're a tough offense to scheme for. If you're playing American high school ball, there's a lot of athleticism, a lot of dodging. Hill is about passing. Hill is about getting the ball out the field, pass, score. And Calvert Hall did not match up well with them. Hill had a couple tremendous offensive players. Jeff Teat, who is a junior committed to Cornell, and Kyle Marr, who is headed to Hawkins in the fall, I want to say. And they just had no answer for them. Those guys were tremendous offensive players. Marr in particular, I've not really seen a ton of him. It was good to check him out. He's going to be a nice piece for what Hawkins is doing on their offense in the future. He's a huge target on the inside. Someone you can feed the ball to. He has great hands and can score quickly. Really like what I saw out of that program. And Calvert Hall, it's a young team. I mean, they have one of the Kellys, Timmy Kelliers. I've covered so many of them that it hurts my brain at this point. But he's an excellent player. They have some young talent, but it'll be interesting. I think they'll play a little bit above board this year, but they might be a year or two away from MIAA title contention.
And, you know, kind of sticking with that theme, a rescheduled game from Friday because of the weather. McDonough, a team who had endured a disappointing overtime setback to Haverford to open their season, returns the favor a little bit with a 13-11 win over Gonzaga, a team that had beaten Hill Academy that we just discussed. You were at that game on Sunday. How did that game unfold from your perspective?
Tremendous battle between those two programs. Really came down to, in the second quarter, there was a 3-minute non-releasable penalty against Gonzaga. Their face-off man, McAvoy, took out one of McDonough's wing guys off the draw, just plowed him over, and the refs called a 3-minute unreleasable penalty, and McDonough went on a 4-goal run in that period, and that was the difference in the game. I think the final score was 13-11, but it was really 13-10. Gonzaga scored a late goal that was sort of meaningless. So that run was really the difference, but a ton of talent on that field in general. That was fun to see. I like McDonough's goalie, Jacob Stover. He's really improved, and he's going to be one of those guys that you see now, and he's only going to continue to improve over time. David Attackman, Robert Clark, who's headed to Georgetown, I really liked. Someone that I never really had been on my radar before, but he is the key to their offense. And when they needed some extra cushion, he scored two goals that he created. He created the shot opportunities himself. They were nice. Gonzaga has a ton of talent. And really, if it wasn't for that penalty, that maybe be a one-goal overtime game. Intriguing with that crew. I like their face-off unit a ton. They have this young recruit, Virginia recruit, Will Rock, beast, long stick midfielder. He snagged at least three turnovers just out of the air, just snagged him right out of the air against McDonald's offense. And Mac Voy, I mentioned at face-off, it's nice piece, really hustles there. And he had a great play in a ensuing game against Culver later in the week. But both really talented teams, and it's not shocked that they're, you know, within our top five nationally.
And, you know, keeping with that Gonzaga theme, you talk about their dramatic win over Culver Tuesday night at Johns Hopkins. And, you know, it was one of those games where kind of sense just following it on social media that it seemed like Gonzaga really had to, I hate this expression, but dig deep in order to win. They had to figure out a way to win after having their backs up against the wall late against a Culver team who was coming off of a somewhat surprising loss to Episcopal Academy earlier in the week.
Yeah, best high school game I've seen in a long time. These two programs really going toe-to-toe. Both of them had rough losses over the weekend. Culver had lost to Episcopal Academy. Gonzaga, we mentioned, losing to McDonough. Gonzaga came out early, took the lead. They had a nice play from their goalie, George Christopher, commit, who's headed to Dartmouth. Great first half. Second half, Culver really controlled the ball. I think they had the ball almost the entire second half. One of their attackmen, Ethan Walker, who's headed to Denver, had a tremendous second half. Really brought them back in and took the lead. He was the one, I forgot if he scored the goal or he had the assist that had Culver take the lead late. Gonzaga pops back with 2 seconds left. Their top attackman, Timmy Monahan, scores on a drive from X to tie the game. Game goes in the overtime. Gonzaga gets the ball. Great play by McAvoy, their faceoff man, to get the ball to his attack. And get the ball to the attack, give the ball to Richie Pettibon. Richie Pettibon is an Alabama football recruit, offensive line, pushing 300 pounds, 6'5", huge guy. He gets the ball to X. And then you see in his eyes, he hadn't had a great game, and you see in his eyes like, oh wait, I'm 300 pounds, I'm 6'5", I can make this play. He's one-on-one against his defenseman, drives right, gets some space, inside rolls and scores, and wins the game in overtime. And just a tremendous play. And when you watch an athlete like that make a move like that, you understand, you know, why he's going to be where he is. It was a fun game and an important game nationally.
And then just to wrap up the kind of quick whip around of games that you saw over the course of the last couple of days, Georgetown Prep 7-6 victors over Gilman in a traditional rivalry, a game that happens every year, and a game that has in the past had a similar scoreline and maybe even a something of a similar pace. But you know, it kind of seems like in speaking with you prior to the podcast that maybe, you know, both these teams are a little bit young yet.
Yeah, Georgetown Prep is undefeated so far in the season. That's good for them. They're playing a little bit above their heads, I think. They have some nice pieces. Their midfielder, Olsen, I can't remember where he's committed to, but he had a hat trick in that game. Both teams ground out that contest, and it really did come down to one goal. I like some of the other teams we talked about a little bit better, but these are both young programs, and I'm looking forward to watching them as the season goes. I believe Gilman plays Haverford soon. Again, a team that I've not seen yet. But that's going to be an interesting game in terms of a team that's going to be very talented versus a team that's, you know, showing its talent, but it's young yet.
Well, Jeff and Josh, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse Isle Preps podcast, and we hope that the folks listening enjoyed it, and we'll check back next week. And the Inside Lacrosse IL Preps podcast continues with Steven Berger, who is the sales manager for Inside Lacrosse and also the head coach at his alma mater, Mount St. Joseph's, in beautiful Catonsville, Maryland. And, Steve, you know, you're making the transition from being a full-time MLL player, you know, coming on board at IL and also taking over your alma mater. It's been, I would imagine, a crazy year for you in terms of just kind of like recalibrating and refocusing, you know, your kind of lacrosse vision. So, you know, can you just kind of give folks a little bit of an understanding of what it's like, not just to transition into being a high school coach, but to take over at your alma mater, where I would imagine that, you know, there's got to be a lot of feelings welling up the first time you step onto the practice field.
Yeah, a little bit of pressure too, right? I mean, I think the bottom line is going into anywhere to coach, there's always that pressure in your first year of how kids will react to you, how you will react to previous seasons they may have had. And just then figuring out what kind of talent you have to work with and sort of where you mold it from there. So, you know, I'm very excited to be back coaching. I've had a few coaches, you know, hats on my shelf, I should say, you know, over the past 10 to 15 years getting out of the college ranks. And it felt like at times I was a coach playing in the MLL, Terry, you know, being a guy that can sort of adapt to what we're doing X's and O's wise. You can't just specifically be a player. So putting that coach's hat on at times as a MLL player, I think has helped me, you know, sort of an attribute to some of the early success I've had relating to the players in the game and relating to the level of play that we're participating in. So it's been exciting. It's been some heavy pressure, I think probably putting more on myself than other people have put it on me. But it's also been sort of a relief to be able to go back to my home roots, the grassroots of which, you know, let me to become the player that I am today. You know, the hard work that I was instilled with at Mount St. Joe, the adversity that I kind of handled while being at a program, you know, at the bottom of the ranks in terms of MIAA. A conference play, and you know, always looking to prove myself, and those three things I think really led to sort of the player that I've put myself out there to be.
Was it always something that you had thought about being the head coach of your alma mater, or was it just a function of an opportunity that arose at a specific or unique time?
Yeah, it was a dream, right? I think as a kid, you always dream about things. Definitely a goal of mine to be a head coach. I think the dream within that was to be at Mount St. Joe. I think to go back to your alma mater is very unique and different than just going to coach, you know, a club program or just another high school team. So, yeah, there's a sense of being comfortable back there and a sense of, you know, pride that I have that I can instill in these kids. So the goal was to be a coach, a head coach, obviously, but the dream was to be back at the Mount, and those worked hand in hand pretty nice.
So you mentioned obviously your style as a player and the, you know, the function of hard work and having to overcome adversity, and you mentioned obviously the traditional station of Mount St. Joe within one of the, you know, kind of more talked about and better regarded leagues across the country. So how do those two things mesh to create the identity of the lacrosse program at Mount St. Joe?
We are the grinders when it comes to putting, you know, our best effort out there. We can't just roll out to a game or even to practice and just think that things are going to come easy for us. We've just always been sort of that blue collar, you know, roll up your sleeves, you know, kind of grinding effort. Big word that we like to use is grit, just because it's something that motivates us. So for me, it's sort of instilling of that hard work and effort, not just while we're there at practice, but what they're doing off the field, whether they're doing it with one another as a team or individually. So, you know, that I think it has helped, you know, me message that, but also for them to maybe see that their head coach has done that, you know, on his own as well to help drive these kids. You know, you mentioned that, you know, we are sort of the bottom tier of our, you know, the most prevalent conference in the country. And, you know, I think another motto that I've tried to instill in these kids is believing in themselves, you know, that they have to play the best to be the best. And, you know, have a little chip on your shoulder approach to, you know, the the feats that we've maybe had in the past and be able to build off that in confidence to roll towards a new season. You know, they're high school kids, so, you know, everything is crazy for them in terms of what they're trying to do in school, what extracurricular activities they have going on outside of lacrosse. So being able to get them honed in and to buy into a team goal is another big effort of mine. And I'm sure every coach in the MIA or even across the country has that, you know, that buy-in mentality to really get your kids to be focused on the simplicity of the game and to work their butts off to achieve the goals that they want.
Five games in, you've got wins over St. John's out of D.C. and Charlotte Catholic, losses, a close loss to St. Stephen, St. Agnes, and then a little bit more of a one-sided loss to Hill Academy, both those teams being in the Under Armour Inside Lacrosse National High School Power Rankings conversation, and then most recently a one-goal loss at Severna Park. You've got friends today. This is, you know, you still have a decent amount of your pre-conference, your non-conference schedule ahead. How would you characterize the way the season's gone so far, and what are some of your goals, you know, maybe over the next 2 to 3 weeks as you prepare for MIAA play?
I would say, and I'm always honest, so that's always important, but it's been a little bit of a peak and valley. I think we've had some great times where we're up high and feeling great about ourselves. And then we sort of beat up on ourselves and don't do the little things that we're supposed to as a team. A big message that I send is consistency, and that's really you know, how we have to approach every day and every game. And you know, with some of those losses, I think our play wasn't as consistent or disciplined as it needed to be. Nothing to take away from the effort or the hard work that the kids have put in or the heart that they put in. I never question that. I think it's more of just the basics that you have to do and be consistent with. So, you know, a couple tough losses, you know, ones that I definitely would like to have back. I was very happy with the way my players responded to Hill Academy being, you know, one of the, you know, most prolific and probably most unique teams in the country. And just the way they responded to that sort of competition. But you know, it's still early, and I think that's one thing I've talked to other coaches, opposing coaches, is it's so early, and every day it could be a great day for you, or it could be a day in which you wish you had back. One thing I've let my players know, and they've taken away, I think, more is we've learned from the losses more than we've learned from the wins that we've had so far. And, you know, you obviously hate to lose, but the things that my players and even my coaching staff have seen, and been able to sort of grow on and develop more on, were from those losses to, you know, earlier this week, Severna Park, to last week, The Hill and St. Stephen, St. Agnes.
You mentioned just kind of opening up the conversation a little bit about how hard you've had to work over your career as a player. And I think that, you know, I think it's very easy to know and understand what is required in order to improve as a player, whether it's getting into better shape or, you know, developing a little bit more strength in your game or, you know, figuring out, you know, particularly for an offensive lacrosse player, a different way that you can carry the ball through traffic in order to, you know, retain possession, or a different, you know, release point that gives goalies trouble. All of that is very easy to understand. What I think is a little bit more difficult to understand is how, as a coach, you try to go about getting better. So, you know, I would imagine that you apply the same type of approach, the same lessons, the same thought processes to improving as a coach, but you do it in ways that are probably a little bit more subtle or a little bit less able to be seen by outsiders. So, do you mind just giving us a little bit of a peek into how you try to get better as a coach?
Yeah, of course. You know, one film. I watch film more now than I watched as a player. Just because it's at my fingertips. So watching whether it's practice film, you know, doing the way we do drills and the way we're approaching, you know, our clearing and riding, looking at game film to see what we did and what we could improve on. So, you know, film has been such a game changer these days, and obviously it's been around forever, but now with the softwares and the ways in which coaches can upload it, you know, within an hour after game time, it really allows me to be able to dive in and also then share that with our players. And instead of just obviously being in a film room session as one, that's a great benefit, but for them to see it on their own and to go in and look at that stuff is been very unique, and different. I think another thing that I've done is I've talked to a lot of high school coaches, both the ones that are, you know, in my league and in my conference that I compete against annually, but also, you know, close network of friends that are coaches across the country, to just pick their brains, different drills they may be doing, different, you know, methodologies that they've been putting in, and different motivational things that they've done to either fire up their team or give them a little spark that they need. So you got to use your resources just as you do as a player, right? You go and get some of the best players around you to go work on the field to improve your game. You do the same as a coach. You know, you go out and talk to other college coaches or other high school coaches and find out what they're doing in these instances or how can they, you know, push certain situations to make your team better. You know, lastly, Terry, I think the hardest thing to do is actually, you know, lean on your assistants. You know, you as the head coach, you know, have to be humble and go to your assistants as well. And find out what they want to do, what they're trying to instill. Because if they don't trust you and you don't trust them, then sort of your chemistry there is almost as important as if you're on a team and you don't have that team chemistry on the offensive or defensive end. So, you know, I've been really working on relying on entrusting and listening to my assistants and giving them sort of the green light to do what they need to do to feel successful. It can't all just come from my mouth. And that's something that I think our players have really bought into is knowing that they have other coaches they can go to and learn from.
And then, you know, kind of the last thing that I wanted to get a sense of from you is, to what degree does coaching high school, coaching at your alma mater, satisfy the competitive drive? So, you know, as somebody who's coming off of, you know, his last season in the MLL, having retired and watching, I'm sure, your close network of friends around the league get ready for training camp, now would be the time of year where I would imagine, you know, the juice would start flowing. Has it been, maybe not replaced, but at least distracted a little bit by the challenge that you've got at hand with the Gales?
I would say it has definitely distracted me. I definitely still feel the buzz of the season coming up with the MLL guys kind of getting into shape. And, you know, the biggest distraction is just more of my emphasis on my own players, you know, making sure that I'm doing what I can do to make them better every day. And that's allowed me to sort of take what I've done as a player and try to instill that into them. So it's definitely taken it away. I will say, though, is I'm way more nervous as a high school coach than I am that I ever remember being as a player. You know, training and gearing up for training camp or even gearing up for a first game. You know, there's nerves as a player, but there was never this sort of nervous, sort of, you know, also, you know, hands are sort of tied, when it comes to game days. Cause you really can only do so much up until that first whistle blows. And then that's where then sort of, you know, your hands again are a little tied and you gotta really rely on what you've instilled on those guys all the way up until that point. So, the distraction is there, yes, but I've become more nervous. I've done, you know, more, things that I typically wouldn't have done as a player, you know, from a, what's it called?
Yoga?
Not yoga, but I would say more from, when you're trying to do something repetitively.
Okay. Habit.
Habit where, you know, I may continue to do that in lacrosse as a player more consistently than now. I'm kind of changing things here and there on the fly a little bit more. And it's just been something that I've adjusted to and again, learned from other coaches.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that's kind of the place we're going to leave it, because going forward, we're hoping to do a high school podcast every Wednesday throughout the remainder of the high school season. And you know, Steven, this is going to be a little bit of a torch that we want to see you carry on the content side of things. So, you know, we'll look forward to hearing you pick the brains of other high school coaches around the country in a similar way to how I just picked yours. So we really appreciate your time. I want to thank the listeners once again for joining us on the IL Preps podcast. We want to hear from you, so email me, tfoy@insidelacrosse.com, sberger@insidelacrosse.com, tweet us, Instagram, Facebook, the whole nine yards. You know how to get in touch with us. We appreciate you listening, and we hope you check back next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thank you.